name is George Coleman. I have the privilege of serving currently as the president of ABA. I'm going to go through some introduction, but my opening remarks will be that this is a forum for you to speak and for your ABA board, who I will introduce you to shortly, to listen. Those things that we're going to discuss today, with the exception of design guideline revision, which has taken place, have not taken place yet. These other issues, they haven't been sufficiently vetted, and that's part of what this process is. Whereas the design guideline revision had almost a year of opportunity and openness for participation by the community. But we'll hear more about that. Speakers will be acknowledged by me as the moderator of this meeting, and we will give you, each speaker, a reasonable time to speak. We'll ask that when you do speak, you stand. We're going to pass one of these to those people who will be speaking. It is a microphone which allows those people on the telephone to listen. They will not be able to call in. We've all had opportunities as members of the community to send in email questions or comments prior to this meeting, and we've received a few, most of which were responded to immediately by me and by Bob Schaefer as well, as the president of the Metro District. Once recognized, please stand, give us your name, and tell us where you reside here in Arrowhead. You're elected volunteer board. The association is comprised of Kathy Bennett, who is here in this spot, Kathy, George Bigley, Dan Gallagher, Tim Robb, Randy Smith, and Patty Strunk. There are seven of us that sit on this board. It is a three-year term elected by the membership, and we cycle off after the 3 years. Most of us, I think just about all of us, have previously served on committees of the association, and we encourage you to do so yourselves. In addition to the people that I've mentioned, the ABA currently has active committees comprised of over 100 of our residents. It's an energized, active, and engaged membership that we have, and we encourage you to be part of that. Many of you already are. Members of the Arrowhead Metro Board, some of whom are president, are president of the board, Bob Schaefer, who you'll be hearing from shortly, Tom Howard, who I saw come in, Tom is back there, Vince Riggio, Bob Rosen, who is here, and Tom Svoboda. Arrowhead Metro District is a separate entity, and when Bob speaks with you, he'll explain the distinguishing aspects between the two different groups. Members of the Design Review Committee, who really do incredible work, sometimes challenging, always interesting work, and their dedication is exceptional, include our chair of the committee, David Cooper, who you'll be hearing from shortly, Gail Gelfand, who I know is here, Kathy Alto, Cam Fry, and Chip Spratt. Lots of involvement. We encourage you to participate as well. Communication with the community has been, I believe, at a heightened level, and we're going to maintain doing that. This is a committed board to being open, to being interactive with our community, giving out information as we have it, and gathering information, input, as you are able and willing to give it to us. We will have, as we've been having, two or three town hall meetings a year. You've received newsletters, email blasts, timely, at least we hope so, responses to inquiries by our members, and surveys. You've completed surveys, exceptional response rates on our surveys. We've had over 500 of our 729, now I think 730 or 31
units respond to the last community-wide survey that we had. We have open posted meetings of the ABA monthly, and indeed we post the minutes to those meetings as rapidly as we possibly can. We've taken to approving the minutes within several days of that meeting and posting them as quickly as we can. It used to be that we waited a month to the next meeting to give you the information, but it's your information, you're entitled to have it, and we want to make sure to get it to you. So you've received a great deal of information from us today, prior to today. You've received, hopefully reviewed those things that we've sent out to you. An executive summary of the recently approved Arrowhead guidelines was part of the package. Information regarding consideration being given to a proposal for Metro District to have a sales tax within Arrowhead, and information regarding short-term rentals and what the community would like to do about that. For those of you who are unable to participate in person and you've been listening on the telephone through the number that we provided, there'll be information that will be the transcription of this meeting will be present for all of us, including those that aren't here today, on our website in a relatively timely fashion. Last year, Carol Floyd, who really is the heart and soul and backbone of this organization, along with Jerry Hensel, made sure to have it out to us in a ridiculously quick period of time, in about a week, transcription of this meeting. In addition, Carol takes copious notes, and then we publish those as well once the board has had a chance to review them and to for accuracy, which they're always accurate, and then posting them to you as well. Today's topics, we're getting going, will include wildfire mitigation, Arrowhead security systems upgrade, design guidelines revision, Arrowhead Metro District proposed sales tax, short-term rentals, an owner's pool, owners and owner guest only pool, to give you an update. That's not going anywhere. I don't want to get you excited, but we'll tell you about that. And other business as you may see fit to present today. This is your meeting. This is your community. And therefore, we encourage your participation. So wildfire mitigation. At ABA's request, the Eagle County Fire District has done an evaluation of the perimeter of our community. We will be making that public to you. There are things that we know that those that are our neighbors, such as Vail Resorts, are going to be undertaking and would have undertaken sooner, except the weather in the summer did not allow us to do that in a safe manner at that time. But there are things that will be done to mitigate fire around the community. But the true mitigation of fire, of wildfire, is the homeowner, how that is taken care of. They will come and do a free assessment of your residence and give you a thorough report, including pictures, diagrams, actions to be taken, and then it falls upon you to take care of that. As I mentioned at the last town hall, those that have undertaken a fire mitigation evaluation and have done something about it, should there be a wildfire, that's who the fire department takes care of first. And you say, well, why? Because it makes sense. You were proactive. You did the good stuff. Let's make sure that, you know, those things that are around you are taken care of as well. So to get, there's no assurance ever that something like that wouldn't hit one of us, but it's nice to know that you can do something about it and that action can sometimes ameliorate what might happen to your home. Any questions on wildfire mitigation?
Yes.
And hello.
Hi. Thank you very much.
You might. Name and where you live?
My name is Fred Kushner. I'm in the Greens at Windermere.
Is there a policy in terms of the closeness of trees to structures within our community that is A, recommended, and B, enforceable?
Is there a policy? That would be a design. There is no policy to that effect. However, if when you have a mitigation study done, they'll tell you. They'll make recommendations. In your particular case, you have an HOA.
Right.
And the HOA is who that should go through. And the HOA, I believe several of the HOAs have already taken action. I know the Springs has. That's where my particular home is. And I know other communities have as well. So is there a specific guideline? No. But I will tell you that with the approval of the ABA, the design review fee for removal of a tree that presents that issue will be waived. But you need to make an application. You need to go through the same process of putting in a deposit that assures that that which you do is appropriate. For instance, you're not taking down three of the neighbor's trees, that it's yours, so you just can't go in willy-nilly. But you make the application, it will be reasonably accepted and without fee. I don't think that specifically answered your question, Fred, but I hope that generally it gave you somewhere to go. Thank you. Other questions? Yes, Kathy?
I called that number about four or five times, and understandably in July and August, they were just overcome with the fires they were dealing with. But I think if you just be persistent, they will come out and do it, and they'll probably have a little more time this fall.
Where is that number available? We sent it to you by email, and we'll attach it to the follow-up to this meeting. Great. The Arrowhead security system upgrade that took place, which involves the opportunity for each of us to get codes that we, I've been away for the whole summer. I know the children's summer camp. And I came back up today. I flew in this morning, landed at the VIA, and needed to get into the gate. And I said, geez, will this work at the gate? The code, is this okay? So I went in, used the code that I had registered. And yes, it does work. Now, that code would be good for any member of my family, but it's not good. I'm not giving that out to just anybody. You have the right to get temporary codes. You have the right to issue a separate code for separate people so you can keep track of them. And so can the ABA of who's utilizing the code. This enhances security. Is any security system perfect? Obviously, we know that that's not the case. But this is a step that the board took in and is going to follow very closely over the course of the next year with regard to its efficacy and whether it needs revision, improvements, enhancement, deletion. Any questions on the security system? Thank you.
No.
All right. Yes. Bob, grab that right there.
I'm very unclear as to how this transpires. My guess, my grandmother,
has
to have a code.
Grandmother, right?
Because we've had problems with grandmothers coming in. Yet we're a public facility. Anybody can come through the front gate right now and go hiking up the mountain, and they can go out at 10 o'clock at night.
Yes, they could. They come in the front way.
Sure.
If they come in the front way, what is at the front gate that's not in the other gates? Somebody to say hello. Who are you? At least some level of recognition. Plus, at these gates now, there is an enhanced video system that not only has the ability to read license plates, but does very good in terms of facial recognition.
So we're screening our announced guests, if you will, but anybody wanting to access the mountain or the workers just kind of come through and go park and day ski a lot.
No, I'm glad to answer that. Jim, glad to see you here, Jim. Jim, would you like to address that?
I can elaborate on it a little bit.
Jim, for those of you, those that don't have the pleasure of knowing you and your position here, which is rather terrific of you to be here today, would you identify yourself?
Sure. Hi, everybody. My name is Jim Clancy. I'm the director of resort services for Beaver Creek, so I have oversight of public safety and Beaver Creek Basketball and Arrowhead. And John Herbert, who many of you know, couldn't be here due to a family issue, so I wanted to be sure and be here myself. George, to help answer your question. George.
Don't insult him.
The codes are intended to be used at the gates on the other side of Highway 6. So if you know you have a guest coming and you live over there, you can use it. Or in the three internal gates. So you call in, have a guest. They would still come through the main gate and say, hi, I'm Bob Maroney's guest. And then they would go to the appropriate internal gate, and that code would allow them access. Works very nicely if you're having a social event. Or your grandma, whichever the case may be.
Or if your grandma's having a social event.
Right.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
So not the east and west road gate.
The east and west gates will be accessible via that the code that you register for yourself. Yes. That is what I used this morning to enter. Yeah. Thank you.
Design.
Is there a question back there?
Sure.
Can I get this to you, please?
Cindy Ingalls, Trailside. Just a quick question. If people in cars need to be cleared through, what about people on bikes?
They do as well. They should, if they're coming, look, frankly, if they're coming
well,
in the east or west, if they're coming through the east or west gate, and they go around the gate, they're not getting identified. That's a reality. Unless we ask our sitting president for additional monies for our walls, it's just not going to happen. The only way that a cyclist can come in and be identified is through the main gate. And that's the reality. I can't tell you anything better.
No, I'm just saying there's a sign in the front that says cyclists need to go through the main gate.
Yes.
But the other day, the security guy was motioning me to go in the outside gate, and I didn't. I went up to him. I said, no, I'm supposed to identify myself and, you know, go through. And he said, no, we're being told now for cyclists to just go in the outside gate. So...
Well, Jim can address that.
Yeah.
Thanks. You like that handoff? We're good, huh?
Yeah. So I believe what you described is exactly what the board had asked us to do. So I would put that in the category of a training miss and a missed opportunity, frankly.
Okay.
And then I would say that we'll work with the team to make sure that everyone's on the same page. So I apologize if that was the case, but that shouldn't have been the direction you were given.
Great.
So you have our apology and you have our appreciation for bringing it to our attention. So at least it can be addressed. Without the knowledge, we can't do anything about it. And Cindy, you're always great about doing that. Thank you.
Okay,
Gail Gelfand?
Gail Gelfand, 150 Sawatch. We had a mishap with a smoke carbon monoxide detector 12:30 at night. Finally came to calling the fire department. They came out. What is our policy when emergency vehicles have to be called to our community?
There's no policy necessary because they can come in directly, pull up to the gate. They have transponders.
Okay.
If they need direction, they'll go by the front gate, which they don't. They know exactly where they're going.
Okay.
All of the local emergency services agencies have transponders to every gate in all three of our communities. We want them to have as free access as possible.
Thank you.
That's a peace of mind. But great question. That's a good piece of education we all were able to share then. Thanks. Arrowhead Metro District, Bob Schaefer is president, is going to speak on the subject of a proposal that the Metro District has. And Bob, at the outset, if you'd be so kind as just to give folks a little bit of a distinction between of what Arrowhead Metro District does.
I plan to do that.
Thank you.
Thanks, George. It's great to see everybody this afternoon. George introduced our board. The Metro District is what we call a quasi-municipal government district. So in simple terms, we're a government district within the state of Colorado. We're subject to many of the state laws, especially against tax. And, in a lot of the unincorporated areas, as some of you are familiar with within Colorado, especially here in Eagle County and in Edwards, it's made up of districts. And you see that when it's on your tax bill, whether it's the Metro District, Ambulance District, Water, et cetera. So
Our board consists of five people. George mentioned Tom Howard, Bob Rosen, Vince Riggio slipped in back there, and then also Tom Svoboda. I've been on the board since November of 2014, and when Chris Matlin left the board because he was term limited in May of 2018, I got the opportunity to serve as the president or the chair of the board. So, again, we're a government agency. We collect from each of the residents within Arrowhead 18.5 mils against your assessed value. I happen to have my tax bill here, and that shows up on your tax bill as Arrowhead Metro District 18.500 under the mill levy. So, you know, that's what we collect. The money that we collect, or the tax revenue that we collect, goes to the roads and road maintenance within Arrowhead. And that was really the original construction of the roads went under the Metro District, and bonds were issued to build the roads within Arrowhead. But we do all the road maintenance, so, you know, when you see milling being done and repaving, that's Metro District, and that's where your tax dollars go. We also own and run through Vail Associates all of the transportation buses during the winter within Arrowhead. So we're responsible for that, with all the transportation, getting people from their homes, you know, up here during the season. And we had five buses, and, you know, we sort of, you know, based on, you know, how we see capacity coming on during, you know, the season. Then the third thing, important thing, is we're responsible for the debt payment on the parking lot that was purchased back in 2008 by the residents of Arrowhead. And that debt occupies about 55% of our budget, or about $1.1 million a year. All of our bonds that are currently in place, they'll be paid off in 2032. So it's a while from now, but that includes the roads and includes the acquisition of the parking lot.
Bob, your board has been very proactive with regards to those bonds and trying to do the fiscally appropriate thing on behalf of all of us as homeowners. And if you undertook something this past year, if you could describe
it. Yeah, we refinanced the bonds, and we'll save, you know, as we go out in the years, about $600,000 against the refinance on that. We had an opportunity to do that.
So. We doesn't mean the board. We need us.
Yeah, the residents. We collect roughly about $2.2 million in taxes each year from the residents. And we have a budget before we spend capital on road improvements or a bus. We have an operating budget about $2 million bucks a year, of which 55% of that, again, is debt repayment. You know, the balance is operating the buses, operating, you know, the rest of the operations within the Metro District in Arrowhead. And we go through that budget every single year. We'll start that process here in October, and we go line by line on that budget every single year. So what I want to talk about today is we've looked at ways to, how do we increase revenue within Arrowhead? We talked about it for over a year with our board. This goes back to when Chris was on it, Dick Beret, who just was term limited and went off the board in May as well. We've talked about it for over a year. How do we, you know, increase revenue within Arrowhead without putting more burden on the taxpayers, you know, or residents within Arrowhead? So, you know, we collect 18.5 mils today. We can go to 20. That's our max. That's where we're cut off before we go to a vote, you know, for additional, you know, mill increases or mill levy increases. So we're going to review a tax proposal, a local sales tax proposal. I'll go through that. We've sent out two communications on it. Hopefully you've had an opportunity to look at those. One went out on July 12th before the 14th meeting, first town hall meeting. That was in a letter form. It was rather lengthy. And, you know, we wanted to do that to explain as much as we could on the details of this. Bob Rosen then presented it at July 14th town hall meeting, similar to what I'm doing today. We then set out a one-page overview in bullet point form, more of a summary of what the proposal looks like, and that went out on August 30th, and it went out from Carol Floyd to residents with the balance of the materials for this meeting. Okay. So
I'll review the contents of this one-pager and give you a kind of an overview and then answer any questions you have. I mean, we've tried to look at this in the best interest of the residents of Arrowhead, and that's our scope. So, you know, we've got some questions on it from some people, which is great. Everybody is entitled to have, you know, questions on this. You're a resident, you're paying, and, you know, we're open to those and the feedback. But we think this is a plan that will help us into the future, and that's what we're looking at. So, you know, one of the things that we've always had a stake in the ground on, and this goes back many, many years, way before I was on the board, back in, you know, probably back into the, you know, late 2000s, mid-2000s, through to when we bought the parking lot, was we want to maintain a cash reserve or fund reserve of $2 million. So if we have that, you know, we manage against that every year that I've been on it. The reason for that is in case we have any type of unbudgeted or, you know, you want to call it a sinkhole or something like that that may come up and that we need to do a major repair. So we keep a reserve of $2 million. That's the way we've managed it. And quite frankly, you know, when we go through our audit, when we went through the refinancing of the bonds, I mean, we have a very, very high rating. I mean, we're in great condition, you know, as a board, and part of it is because of what we keep in our cash reserve. So that's sort of a, you know, that's a stake in the ground and something that we're going to continue. The purpose that we're talking about, this sales tax, is really deals with a constitutional law or amendment that the state of Colorado has. So back in 1982, the state of Colorado, because of escalating residential prices and values, decided they were going to impose a law called the Gallagher Amendment, no relation to Dan, that really was the budget for where real estate tax dollars came from, between commercial and between residential. And that was set at 55% commercial and 45% residential. And that, you know, that's been challenged over the years, and quite frankly, I don't think it's ever going to go away. You know, we talk to, you know, our tax people, we talk to our lawyers, very familiar with all this. So then what they did with the commercial is they fixed the commercial assessed value rate. So the assessed value rate is the percentage against your assessed value. So when you get your tax bill and you see, you know, what your house is valued at, you then have an assessed value rate that the mill levies are applied against. So the commercial rate is fixed at 29%. So again, then they have to contribute 55%. The residential floats, because the residential moves with property values, essentially. And so what's happened with the escalation in real estate values, especially in the Front Range and certainly with the resort markets coming back, that rate has continued to decline over the last 4 years. So it was 7.9% back in 2016-17. It's a two-year fixed period. In 18-19, it dropped to 7.2. And in 20 and 21, it's going to go to 6.2. Again, because you can't contribute more than 45%. So, you know, the rate decline is good, obviously, for residents. But from a metro district standpoint, it puts a hole in our budget. And it puts a hole from the course of about 2020 to 2024 of about $500,000. And so, you know, that comes right out of our operating budget. It reduces our $2 million reserve that we want to keep in place and essentially has impact on what we can spend on capital and roads. So that's $500,000. And that's really looking at it in 2020 and 2021 at this 6.2%, and it could go down, you know, when that next 2 years comes up, you know, depending on what happens with values, and values continue to go up within Colorado, and it's a Colorado rate. So, you know, we looked at, and we've talked about it a lot, we could increase the mill rate and take your taxes from 18.5 mills to 20. We're allowed to do that. That's been voted on previously. That's about $150,000, so that could wipe out part of it, or most of it, over the course of 5 years. It doesn't really protect us against additional downsides that could occur. if the if the assessed value rate goes from 6.2 to 5.5 or 5.2, depending on what happens to values. But we didn't think that was the right thing to do. So we looked at other districts and other, resort areas, or you want to call them, areas that are comparable to Arrowhead within the valley. And Beaver Creek has essentially a sales tax, 5.95%. Bachelor Gulch has had a sales tax, a local sales tax in place of 5% since 2011. And last year, Red Sky voted unanimously, actually, to put in a local sales tax of 5.5%. So, and then there's a couple more communities that have it as well. So our proposal is to implement a local sales tax of 5.5% within Arrowhead. That spreads the burden across not only residents, which is a small percentage of it actually, but to a lot of the outsiders that come into Arrowhead and utilize our properties, whether it's renters or, day hikers, et cetera, people that park in the skier lot and come to Broken Arrow, et cetera. So, we felt very strongly that looking at what has happened in these other communities that's worked well, that we would propose this versus taking the taxes up, essentially.
Bob, you stated in your summary there, but if you could underscore exactly what sales tax will be placed upon.
Yes.
I'm getting to that.
So,
the
5.5% actually over the course of, if implemented, July 1st, 2019 through 2024 is $2 million, potentially. That's our forecast, based on what we know and what we forecasted. So it's quite a bit more than $500,000. I'll get to what we plan to do with that in a minute. So the sales tax would be applicable to the following. It would include CCR's Pro Shop and merchandise sales only, merchandise. So clubs, shirts, shorts, clothes. To people inside Arrowhead and people that come in from outside Arrowhead. And it's simply passed on to the consumer. Vista food and beverage sales, Broken Arrow food and beverage sales here. The Alpine Club, food and beverage, and also their merchandise that they sell downstairs. Beaver Creek ticket office merchandise, so just, they sell some gloves and hats and stuff as small, but that would be applicable. Tickets are not, rentals are not. And then within the community, short-term rentals on condos or housing. So that would be part of the 5.5%. So that's what it consists of. Very specific. We didn't make it up. It's governed by the state. So that's how it works. As I mentioned, this is not the business paying it. It's the consumer paying it. So some of it's us. But our other estimate is 75% of the sales tax collected will come from outside the gates, with about 58% of that being rental, short-term rentals. So at 5.5%, again, the nightly rental rate. The other thing that we plan to do is obviously we would anticipate that we'll have a surplus. Depending. We'll have to get into this and see if, the actual revenues, if you all vote on it, agree to it, if the actual revenues do come in as projected. If they do, we just want to maintain our $2 million, reserve, be able to spend our capital, but we have that in the budget, to maintain our roads, because the roads look great today, they're going to continue to look great, make sure we have the right transportation services. So there's no real incremental money that we need except to capture this downside of Gallagher. So what we would look to do is we would look to then decrease the mill rate for the residents within Arrowhead. And, we've got a best practice or a case study on where that happens. So Bachelor Gulch put theirs in 2011. It was 5%. They had a mill rate of 21. Their mill rate today is 13. So they have been able to decrease it. Ken Marchetti, who is our accountant, works with Bachelor Gulch. He was there when they implemented it, and he said it's been a huge win-win for the community. And, they get a lot of that out of the Ritz. They have some short-term rentals up there as well. They've got food and beverage and merchandise sales, so, but it has created a big win-win for the community, and that's what we would look to do, is then decrease the mill rates within Arrowhead. How much? You know, that's to be determined based on, you know, how the revenue flows in, you know, how we capture this $500,000 downside and any other downsides because of the Gallagher Amendment, but, you know, that's what we would propose to do. So the way it would work, this would be voted on in mid-October. You would get a ballot. It's only for Colorado residents. That, I didn't make that up. That's the state law, but it would be Colorado residents who have property in Arrowhead, whether you reside here full-time or whether you reside here part-time. So it's for Colorado residents. We have about 300 registered voters within Arrowhead today, registered Colorado resident voters in Arrowhead. So mid-October ballot would come out, and then that would be sent back in by November 6th. And if approved, then by simple majority, one vote, it would go into effect on July 1st, 2019.
Before we go to questions, to Bob, first Bob, thank you. That was an excellent presentation. I saw that Bert Solomon and I were able to follow it. It's very impressive when the two of us can understand these things. But it's something that he said that Bob touched on, if he's not touching it, he was very clear on it in the end. There are two constituencies in Arrowhead. One is anybody who's an owner is a member of the Arrowhead at Dale Association and is a voting member of that association. However, with the Metro District, the vote is only by virtue of having a Colorado residency. Not necessarily if you are a full-time resident here, as Bob pointed out, if you are a Colorado voter, you have the right to vote on Metro District proposals. Now we'll turn it back to you.
Yes. Just one other thing. I mean, I'm happy myself or Bob or Tom, Ben, Tom Swoboda, we've all gone through this for hours, believe me, and very knowledgeable on this. We're happy to sit down with anybody, you know, one-on-one or phone call or whatever you want to do if you need clarification at any time. So happy to do that. Yes.
Question here, and then we're going to go here.
Neville Van Nickel, Castle Peak 8. You mentioned that half of the bonds were for acquiring the parking lot. Why can't we charge for that, for people who are using it?
Good question. And we, believe me, we made probably five pitches to be able to do that with Vail Resorts. When the parking lot was acquired, in the deed, it stated that Arrowhead could not charge for parking. That's the simple answer. And so we've gone back to Vail Associates. We've met with Beth Howard, you know, all the way to the top of Beaver Creek. And at this point in time, they are not willing to open that up.
Why not?
They're not willing to open it up.
Because they've got the biggest you-know-what in this pissing contest.
And you know what I say, we're not going to stop trying, because that's not my nature, but, you know, that's sort of where they are today.
Do we have a question? Yeah.
Just as a follow-up to that question, has there been talk about perhaps doing an analysis to see whether decreasing the millage with those new funds or paying off the bonds early?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good question. That's something that we could look at potentially doing. I don't know if we have a prepayment. I don't think we do, but...
Well, we can pay off Bob Rose and Metro.
We can pay off about $3.5 million of the bonds in 2000. We can pay off half of that approximately in the end of 2019. The other half in the end of 2021. That's about $3.5 million. So the interest on that is around 4% of $3.5 million, $120,000. That's a possibility, but if the sales tax brings in the kind of money that we're hoping for, those two bonds that we have the ability to prepay, I think the board should seriously look at that.
Yeah.
But we just don't know how much money is going to come in.
Good question.
The way it works, too, I mean, there's a lot of years from now, 14, the bonds will all be paid off by 2032. And again, 55% of that 18.5 mils is going to the bonds. That goes away. So legally, that goes away. So we're only left with 45% of the 18.5 as operating, you know, as it is today, without reducing any of the 18.5. So,
Bert?
Bert Solomon, as a follow-up to the question about the skier, charging for skier parking, is anybody investigating the chance of eliminating the covenants that require us to have public parking?
Yeah, it's the same deal. I mean, it's in the deed restriction. I mean,
yes, I understand that drive. Are you looking to break it?
Yeah,
the deed restriction. I spent a year talking to lawyers, looking at it, creating some leverage for negotiations.
Bar a lawsuit. And the short answer is, the language is unbreakable. That's the answer I got from a number of different people. It's great language for Vail, it's horrible language for us. It's just that simple.
Yep.
Thanks.
Bob Curlander, and then we'll go to...
Bob Curlander, Buffalo Park 11. First of all, quickly about the parking lot. We negotiated that point for years. We tried... And not myself, the board, your board, and the people who went through that know how much time you spent on that point. That's not my question. My question is, what's the state rule for short-time rentals, and how will you monitor people that don't rent, have their condos managed by Vail Resorts or some local...
There's an agency that monitors and employ them. It's a very, very small expense. And people employ them to monitor.
What's the deal?
Your first thought, 30 days is the threshold for short term.
Oh, I'm sorry, 30 days is the threshold. 30 days.
29. 30 or more is long term.
Yep.
Less than 30 is short term. Arnie, you
have... Yes. Just a simple question. When you were talking about Arnie Galpin, 150 Sawatch, when you were talking about 300 residents, Colorado residents here in Arrowhead, is that per household or is that husband and wife?
That's husband and wife. Okay. So there's 300 registered. So that would be, you know, Kathy and I, for example, or you and Gail.
Okay.
Yep, not households. Individuals.
Okay.
Yep.
Bill, let me give you this.
Yeah, Bill Chapin, 254 Windermere. Bob, could you just clarify what the tax would do kind of to the competitive position of, say, Vista? I mean, does this mean that other things being equal, it would cost me 5.5% more to dine at Vista than to Juniper?
It would. Well, Juniper's got another 1% Edwards tax. So it would cost you 4.5% more than it would to say at Juniper. Up in Beaver Creek, it'd be equal, you know.
Oh, okay. So if you're in Beaver Creek, it'd be sort of comparable.
Comparable. Yep.
But Vista would be at a disadvantage vis-a-vis.
Yeah, depending on what
a restaurant Edwards or.
Yeah.
I mean, other things being equal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Playing devil's advocate, this is George Paul.
Exactly.
Playing devil's advocate. I would think not many of us will choose a restaurant by the sales tax that they're charging. We won't look at that before we go to the restaurant. We're going to go to the restaurant we want to go to. I don't think the impact will be what we're concerned about, but and I don't have a dog in this fight. I'm just having to think that way.
You're correct. It would be more than that.
Yeah. Yeah, Nick Cicchino, 201 Spruce Street. Bob, good presentation. Just, I have two really... comments or questions. One is, since Bachelor Gulch instituted their sales tax, that's a dramatic drop in what their mill tax is, but we're still half of what they are, correct?
No, they're at 11.
And we're at 6?
We're at 18.5.
Oh.
Our current rate.
Current rate, yeah.
Okay,
because they were at 21 in 2011, they're at 13 today.
Okay.
Yeah.
That clarifies that. Then the second question I had, the $2 million reserve.
Yes.
How's that working for us? I mean, as far as, is it in a CD? I mean,
CDs. Typically, they come up. You know, we just took out a new CD, and obviously we've got some favorable rates to what we've had. And then we're actually doing the next one over 3 years. You know, so at about 3.1%. 2.7. Okay, under 3.
So that yields in roughly what, 40 grand, something like that?
Well, we buy them in a quarter of a minute. Yeah. I mean, there's our interest. I can look it up, but yeah.
They're getting the highest possible interest rate that is available at the time of investment.
Yeah.
I just want to say, with the increasing interest rate environment, our CDs are yielding more than we're paying on our $8 million of bonds. So we refinanced last year. So that's a little sense.
Yeah.
Dick O'Loughlin, 266 Saw Watch. You mentioned that you were looking at ways to raise revenue. I didn't hear you say anything about a sales tax on the ski lift tickets or the skis that are rented or sold in the little shop over here.
Yeah, they are not subject to sales tax. Tickets are not subject to sales tax. I mean, that's by Colorado law. Nor of the skis. So it's like, you know, and I don't know why, it's like golf carts or CCR. You know, our $25 they pay for golf carts. It's not subject to tax because it's considered more of a service versus a tangible piece of property that you have. That's, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Going back to David there.
David Cooper, 336 to watch. I heard there was a conversation at one point about the ABA board imposing a fee on rentals as well. Is that still in conversation? Because that would be like a double tax to anybody doing a rental.
That is not in conversation. There's no fee that's ever been discussed other than a potential fee for getting a permit, a one-time per year. It's not on every single rental, but we'll be discussing that in the next session. Good question. So we will not be undertaking a double taxation. There was a Bill?
Yeah, Bill Chapin again.
Bob, did I understand you to say that, what was it, 50 or 60% of this tax we estimate would be paid or would come from rentals?
Yeah, about 58% comes from short-term.
58, but it wouldn't, the rental.
That's our forecast.
Yeah,
so.
But the tax wouldn't apply to Village Core rentals.
Yeah, we would apply to every rental.
Oh, okay.
Every rental.
Yeah. Every short-term rental.
Short-term, under 30 days. Yes, so 29 and under.
Thank you. Any further?
Thanks, Jerry. Brian Swords, 70 Cal Speak Boat. Just a question in terms of, I know you're going to say you expect a shortfall about $500,000 over 5 years. What does that equate to on an annual basis? How much do you think the sales tax will offset that that deficit on a per annual basis? Second question is, how do you arrive? I mean, what data did you go out and gather in order to come up with some of the projections of what that sales revenue would look like? My question is, you know, let's make sure we're working with real good quality numbers.
Right. No, that's very good point. The short-term rentals we utilized using Vail Resorts numbers on what they rent, approximate number of days, and so the short-term rentals was the approximate number of days that Vail Resorts at a certain, you know, their average room rate per night. So we utilized their data, so we went by that. And then, you know, that came up with roughly 60%. You know, the rest of it was, you know, estimates here, what we thought Broken Arrow did, knowing somewhat what Vista does and what CCR does in apparel and stuff. There's some knowledge there. And a, you know, small, they were very conservative estimates in terms of here, the sphere, ticket office, and also Alpine Club. But we have pretty good knowledge of the short term from Vail Resorts and pretty good knowledge of Vista and CCR.
And we're encouraging you to work the other side of the jewelry.
You know, we think this will generate, I mean, again, this is a forecast. It's about $350,000 a year. The shortfall is 100. So this is 250,000. You know, every 100,000, a mill rate is about $100,000. So if you kind of do some of the math there to look at, you know, what could this mean to me over the course of time? You know, and again, depending on what happens after the 2020 and 2021, what happens to the Gallagher Amendment when it resets in 22 and 23, the assessed value rate?
Brian, that was a great question. It's a great opportunity for both of these boards to express to you. A lot goes into, before we come to these meetings, before we send stuff out to you, there is so much vetting that takes place. The amount of time that I know that the Metro District and their professionals have put into this process is exceptional. And they don't come just, they come up with a number and throw it out there. They've really worked at this. And again, Ryan, thank you for presenting that opportunity to discuss that. Other questions, comments with regard to the Metro District proposal, which when it is proposed formally, you will get in writing in a ballot form. Any other questions?
Thank you all so much.
Patty Strunk, 346 Cresta. Could you
Patty, come here so everybody can hear you. Thanks.
Patty Strunk, 346 Cresta. I'm just asked if you could just maybe touch base on the Cresta Road situation with the bikers and the hikers. Sorry, Ben.
She's wearing her hat of public safety chairperson on the committee. Yeah,
well, because we worked against this, and it's been a frustrating thing, I know, for a lot of people. Anyway, so we have put down trying to manage, you know, the bike activity on Cresta, which gets wild, and Cindy Engels is back here, who's done a great job of studying all this with the trailside homeowners and a lot of folks up on Cresta. So we put down markers, much like they had in Avon, for bikers to try to stay on the sides of the road and try to stay in those lanes. The next step is we're going to put down pedestrian markers, and we're going to actually ask pedestrians, and again, you know, some of this is up to you, but we're going to ask them to access up and digress down on one side. And it's more for your safety. So we're going to put some markers. Jerry and I are going out Tuesday morning at 9 o'clock to look at places to put those markers. We're also going to put some bigger signage in, 18 by 24, comparable to the size of the speed limit sign, to try to keep people, you know, bikers on the right side of the road. You know, we've got speed limit signs. We've asked them to go 20. They don't go 20. Downhill, they go 40 or 45. I don't know how to stop it. Other than that, you know, we've talked about, you know, just not letting people come into the community at all. We don't know if that's the right thing to do, so to exclude people. But, you know, we're trying to do as much as we can to keep people riding their bikes on the far sides of the road, you know, within the markers that we set down. So the pedestrian will go up here, you know, probably within a week.
Was that me? Tom Howard? You'll go next, Bob.
Yeah, I'm Tom Howard. I just wanted to try to pull a few threads together. There's been a lot of questions, good questions, a lot of comments. Bottom line is, because of the Gallagher Amendment, we're going to get a shortfall. The question is, how do we fix that? We can fix that by taxing everybody in this room to pay for it. I don't know about you, but I don't want to do that. Or we can do it by way of a sales tax, because by doing it by way of a sales tax, about 75% of the money that comes in from outside and isn't borne by the people in this room, number one. The bonus on top of that is that if things go the way we hope and expect they might, but we don't know because we are dealing with variables and estimates, educated estimates, but nonetheless estimates. If things go the way we hope they're going to go with the sales tax, we in fact may do better than just covering up the Gallagher Amendment shortfall. And if we do that, then we could be potentially talking about reducing our tax, which is even better.
Excellent summary and review.
Thanks. Again, if you need anything one-on-one, any one of us from the board are happy to meet with you, talk with you. So thanks again for
a clarification on the bike
intention.
And thanks for doing that. So the expectation is bikers go up and come down on the right side?
No, they go up on the right
with
side.
Traffic.
Yeah, go up on the right side and down on the right side.
With traffic.
Their right side changes when they turn around.
Yeah. With traffic.
Okay.
Which is not legally, in the state of Colorado, legally that's what they're supposed to do.
And then walkers and hikers on the left side going up and left side.
Right side, and it would be their left side coming down.
Right.
That's our recommendation.
Okay.
And with traffic and against traffic. And people walk in all different ways today.
Yeah.
But our intent is, you know, what we'd like to do from a safety standpoint is try to keep walkers on one side of the road.
And we've thought about but are not instituting dog tours to collect people to one side or the other.
Bob, Cindy, yes.
I think I can just...
Cindy's been very involved and instrumental, not only as a member of that committee, but as a spokesperson for the people at the top of Cresta.
Yep. I just think I can make sense of this as far as if you just follow the pavement safety markers, that it's as simple as can be. And the reason why we have pedestrians going up on the right and descending on the left is because we've studied Cresta Road. It's a steep, blind curved road, so it's a unique road. And what's happening now is we have ascending pedestrians going up on the left and descending fast bikers coming down in that same path. And we will have three pedestrians and a dog on a leash meeting a descending biker. So we've really studied it, and it's great that we're just now letting people know where to be on the road. Nobody knew before. So everyone that lives up on Cresta Road was playing dodgeball with their vehicles, dodging people because nobody knew where to go and their bikers didn't know where to go. So now everyone knows where to go, and it's as safe as we think we can make it. So, thank you.
All right, thank you, everybody.
Thanks.
Yep. Little interlude before we go on to short-term rentals. There was a response to a survey that was completed by all of us that said among the amenities that were important to us would be an owner-only swimming pool, owners and owner guests, because of crunch time in the summertime, the number of non-owners that are there utilizing it. So your board went out and began an investigation. It was a long process. It was just about a year where we looked at sites. Rick and Bert and I went throughout the community, checked out different swimming pools, tried to select a site that would be appropriate here in Arrowhead. As you went through, there were at least eight suspects before they became prospects of locations. We engaged through the good offices of Jerry, a pool design company, just to give us an idea of what the cost would be. And the site selected may have received some pushback from neighbors, and in fact did, because we discussed it with those neighbors there. It was going to be in the western corner of the parking lot over by the Boulders HOA, just offsetting slightly from the existing playground. It would have been to build a vanilla swimming pool over there, $6 million. That was not what we would. The biggest cost in that was the pool. It was the excavation. It was the buttressing of land mass in that location. It would have been very nice, but that is not a reasonable thing for us to propose to you, and we wouldn't do that. So to say that it's an active consideration right now would be inappropriate. It is not an active consideration. Is it a closed deal? No. Your board, whether it's this one or the board will succeed us, we'll have an open mind, and we'll always try to be receptive to the direction that the community gives us.
any questions about that? In that regard, then I'd like to proceed on to short-term rentals. Something that is appropriate for us all to understand is that no decision of any sort has been made. A subcommittee very capably headed by Immediate Task President Rick Ross made a report. Several of you were on that subcommittee, made a report to the Strategic Planning Committee that it is a sub to. The Strategic Planning Committee received that report this past week and will be formalizing, has formulated its own report to go to the board. Among the things that were initially considered, as is in the summary that you received, a short-term rental being 29 days or less, that would have regulations built into it. Those regulations would include such things as having to get a permit, a license, so to speak, that to achieve that license, you would pay a nominal fee one time for that period of time, a year. Who knows if it would be a year or 2 years, but it would be a specific period of time. That license application would include your providing information about your place that you agreed to inform those people who are renting from you where the fire extinguisher is in your unit, that you have carbon monoxide sensors, that where the garbage goes, how many cars you are entitled to park, and if you have overflow of cars that still fall within the reasonable nature of inhabiting the property, that you contact public, what the procedure is, contacting public safety, so that the rules for the renters are no different than the rules that Randy has, or that Donna has, or that the Nesneys have, that any of us have. Human decency is what these regulations were calling for, and there would be a good neighbor set of guidelines that would be provided to the residents. This would be posted in the units. Initially, there was a discussion about what would be a minimum stay. Well, there was consideration of a minimum stay of anywhere from no days to 6 months. Those were discussed. What is come down to, and what was also confused, never was there a discussion of or a progression of discussion to consideration of a minimum stay in what was called, what is referred to as the core. The village core of Arrowhead are these condo buildings here and the Seasons right next to CCR. That was what was referred to as the core. There's no consideration of a minimum stay within the core. There was consideration, and I'm not telling tales out of school, that what will be presented to the board by the Strategic Planning Committee this coming week for its meeting, the board's meeting, will the recommendation will not include a minimum stay for any residents here in the community. That's for now. We're going to see how things go, and if we decide to go to regulations, we can revisit regulations down the road and see if there's a need for doing such a thing. Any regulations that we do will not be passed, will not be promulgated, will not be furthered without you, without your vote, your approval, and your acceptance. That being an initial presentation to you, we open the floor for your comments and your concerns. Please. Omar Gale?
I don't think this thing is. Well, it's not working. So
it's not working.
What?
Yeah.
It's not.
Got a microphone.
Whoa, Carol.
Oh.
Okay, Carol Tucker, Lariat B5.
I two comments about the pool and what I have been told. First of all, I observed personally several young adults drinking alcohol in the pool. And upon discussing this, I found out that this is now allowed, that people who come to the pool or the hot tub are allowed to bring alcoholic beverages as long as they're in a particular holder. Now, I tell you, when people have alcohol, it gets loud and rowdy, and it was. Today, passing by the pool, there were people with a boombox playing loud music. Well, maybe not everybody wants to hear loud music at the pool. Again, who decides that this is allowable?
Great question. Who's in charge of the pool? Alpine Club. It is the Alpine Club pool. They have the jurisdiction on the pool. Now,
thank you. You're right, Lauren. George Coleman again. The Alpine Club has the ownership of the pool and the responsibility for the pool. It was ceded to them initially when the pool was moved BC, before Coleman, to that location. The Alpine Club, because I did some digging, is supposed to have an advisory committee. That advisory committee is comprised of somebody from the Corps, from the village here, somebody from ABA that we appoint, we're taking care of that, and somebody from the Alpine Club. They are to prepare a budget, which is to be approved annually. That hasn't happened in a decade. They are to present, and they're open to, by the way, we've had very positive discussion. That's going to take place now. And they that the advisory committee is supposed to also make up the regulations that have to be approved. Ultimately, it has to be approved, accepted by the Alpine Club, because, as we said before, they have in the figures in the fight. So we're going to make sure to hold their feet, and they're openly willing to that. What I would
decision was already made, and allowed by.
I don't know if it has or it hasn't. We're going to find out for sure now that you brought it to our attention. And what I recommend is, as we say in this country now with regard to terrorism, this isn't necessarily a terrorist act. If you see something, say something. So public safety doesn't know about it, or in this case, the ABA's board, I don't think, was aware of this. If we don't know about it, there's nothing we can do about it. That is why we have town hall meetings as well, because we'd like to know what you'd like to know or would like to say about short-term rentals, so I can bring us back to that. Arnie?
Just my understanding, because Arnie Gelfand wants to sell lots. But you were saying that the whole village itself is going to be subject to renting for any length of time that they want. In other words, outside of the core, people could rent for 1 day, 2 days.
What you're saying is there's no current proposal that I believe is when it comes to the board. I can be corrected by Dan, that chairs the strategic planning, or by Rick, who sits on the committee with us as well. There's no current proposal that I think is coming before the board that would limit rentals in terms of time. I don't know that that's going to be the case. I think that's going to be a recommendation. The board is going to consider one other thing of considerable impact, and that's going to be your comments today. We want to hear. And we also have received and responded to many email comments, most of which have said that their concern wasn't in terms of the length of stay, because they say somebody who's staying for a longer term is as likely, maybe not, almost as likely to be inappropriate as somebody who's staying for a shorter term. But what they're saying, their biggest concern is that the regulations be evenly distributed, fair-handed in terms of their enforcement, and that there be some teeth there, so that even though in our current declaration there are responsibilities that we have as owners for people who rent from us, and there are fines that are there, there's no teeth in that we can't, without going to court, revoke their privilege or their right to rent. Whereas if there's a complaint that is verified and not responded to appropriately or it's disregarded, then if there are regulations, that permit can be pulled. There's a, yes, tell me your way.
Holly Gill, 1963 Cresta. On one of the surveys, I was under the impression that the determination of whether this rental was going to be across the board Arrowhead or by each individual association. I thought, like, the Trailside Association could determine whether
they wanted to create a policy, or if it was going to be left to Arrowhead. And from what I'm hearing today...
No, you're right. There is another layer. HOAs have the right to impose greater restriction, but they must at least have the same restriction that the General Association has. So if an HOA says, well, we have several HOAs have already done it. They've agreed to a minimum stays of 3 or 4 or however many days. But an HOA can do that, but it's up to the HOA. Yes, please.
I'm Joanne Carter. I live 361 Aspen Ridge, and I have been impacted by short-term rentals very, very negatively. We are a duplex. We are at the end of a very private road. The short-term renters that stay less than a week are abusive. They're rude. They park on the grass. They scream in the backyard. They scream in the hot tub. I the list goes on and on and on. It's never going to stop. The person who owns the unit is never there. He's not invested in the community. He bought it only as an investment. He is looking at another duplex in Arrowhead, so good luck, everyone. He happens to have one for sale next to you. And the renters that come for less than a week are definitely far worse than all the renters that come for, say, 2 weeks. And we are the only place around here that doesn't have any regulations. Single tree, you have to rent for 6 months.
That can't be in declarations.
Yes.
That way.
Places in Avon are not allowed to have short-term renters. Courtier is looking into it now. I mean, even Desert Mountain in Arizona has a 30-day minimum. We've got to start with some regulations pretty soon, or it's going to overtake us. And I've seen what's happened to me. I mean, I shouldn't have to live in a multi-million-dollar residence to have a short-term renter move in next to me without any regard. Never told us they were renting it. We had to figure it out. That oh my gosh, they're renting this place up. We had no idea. This is a very quiet street, and they race up the streets in their cars. They honk when they come in the driveways. It just goes on and on and on. I can't tell you, but if it has, I mean, it's time for regulation.
So if there were regulations and somebody had to receive a permit to a rent and they had that permit pulled from them, that probably would have quite an impact.
Yeah.
Did you call public safety?
I call public safety all the time. I'm a very regular caller. There's only so much they can do, and they don't see what happens behind your house. I know neighbors on two sides. I only have them. So no one else can see how I'm in there.
So regulations would be very helpful in this regard.
Yes, but it is the shorter term one where we have the worst problems.
Bert Solomon, Riverbend Court. I do not have a homeowners association, and I would like to speak out against short-term rentals outside of the court. Joanne's problem has been going on for 2 years. I know of three other locations within Arrowhead, one near Tom Howard, where the same thing takes place, where they're constantly calling security about too many people, parking, parties, drunks. I don't have a problem with short-term rentals within the court.
Right.
However, I think the majority of the full-time Arrowhead residents live outside of the court, and we bought here for the environment that is so great, and we know. I don't have a problem in sharing it with somebody for 30 days. I do have a problem in sharing my environment, my space with somebody for 3 days. Thank you.
Next year, we'll go here and then there.
I'm Jen Sorge. We live at 70A Castle Hill Close. We've owned our place for 15 and a half years. We have rented our home for 15 years. I personally vet all of our renters. Most of our renters do stay a minimum of a week. Some of them stay longer. We have had several renters fall in love with our community, decide they want to buy in our community. We are very careful about the rules and regulations and stipulations we have in our home. We have written recommendations and rules for our renters to follow. I am all in favor of having to pull a permit and have our renters abide by the same rules as our homeowners. However, I do feel like it's an infringement of our personal freedom to be able to not rent our house for less than 30 days. We've never had a complaint, and we've rented for 15 years.
Sources are very discriminating with regard to who they rent to. I know because I tried to rent from them. I've never forgiven them. Yeah. Dan, you go. Thanks.
Yeah, of course. I think that just kind of coattail on what we just said. The crux of the problem are the people that are rented to and the controls you have, not the length. Now, I would grant you, there's probably a higher propensity on short term to get the wild partiers for a few days, but it all comes down to the permit and the teeth within it. Somebody's going to have to have the teeth, the permit committee, whatever it is, to say, you're not going to rent for the next 2 years. If you don't like that, sell your property. Or a year. I mean, I'm not saying what the control. It's not the length
of time. It's the consequences, and the severity and the quickness that happens. That word will spread, and if you made an investment, you'd suddenly start vetting your people a lot better.
Thank you. Yes, go ahead.
Hi, I'm Helena Sparling, and we built our house in Arrowhead back in 1988, so I've been here for a long time as a part-time person and then lived in the community for 3 years. I found over the years having the opportunity to rent out my property has been a blessing to our family. We do very few short-term rentals, but we do have them occasionally, as well as long-term rentals, and have found that we put in our rental agreements like you're doing. Arrowhead has to agree to follow all the rules and regulations of the Arrowhead Association, and we secure a deposit, which we always refunded because they've always followed the rules. I don't think it's right to take away the private property rights of individual owners from us. And I'm a great believer in protecting our private property rights, and I think we should have the opportunity to work on the issues individually with the owner if their guest, and I consider a renter is a guest, if that guest is causing any kind of disturbance to the neighborhood or community. On the other hand, I think it's a great opportunity to open up our neighborhood and allow others to come in and see what a great place we have and be able to enjoy this wonderful environment. I find Arrowhead at its best when all the houses are full of people and everyone's enjoying the community using its many assets and advantages.
Thank you. And what you might do with that extensive agreement that you have with your renters, you might include there, should there become regulations, that any fines imposed on the owner will be paid for by the renter. We have somebody with a microphone on it.
I was just going to say, in this vein, if you institute these guidelines and restrictions, whatever it is, who's going to back it up as far as trying to penalize someone who breaks these rules?
ABA.
And, I mean, you're willing to go ahead and back that up?
Sure, I'm on the board, yes, and I'd be glad to take a walk board to sit on that committee.
Yeah.
George, just a thought, but financial consequences is a big thing.
Yeah.
So if you have...
If the permit has a $5,000 deposit attached to it, or about whatever, that could be taken away.
Interesting.
Then there's financial consequences for the renter.
About that. If we need somebody devious with those ideas, that's good. I'm glad to step more into it. Someone else, comment.
Here you go.
Brian.
Here you go, Brian.
I just think any regulation that gets passed regarding short-term rentals, long-term rentals, is that we think about the entire valley, because we do compete with the entire valley. And if 20% of the homeowners here rent, and you lose that rental, how's that going to impact sales tax and all the other things we're trying to accomplish here in terms of raising revenues?
Thank you.
That's why when we, thank you, that's why when we put these, it, should we go ahead with regulations, and I think the leaning is to do that, strong leaning, that those regulations aren't just going to go, poof, they're there. You're going to see them. You're going to have a chance to make input on them. We are reasonable people, as you are, and we expect that we will put forth reasonable regulations. Other comments?
Bill?
Yes, Bill Chapin again. We've never rented our home, and I don't have any intention of doing so. However, I think there is value. My ability to rent, I think, it creates a value in the property. And there could be certain circumstances where, you know, where I wanted to do that. So I agree with those that, you know, it seems to me that the vast majority of rental demand here would probably be for a week or so. But I would kind of be reluctant to have, you know, like a 30-day minimum, personally.
Reluctant on that basis and reluctant on homeowner rights.
All
right, which is what you brought
on.
Yes, go ahead, please.
Thank you. Carla Smith, 103 The Seasons, which is right in the fork. Had I bought there, well, had I known there were six minute renters, I would never have bought, but I did. So I think they go to two places when they get here. They go to City Market and they go to the dispensary. They come, it's a revolving door. They come every 2 to 3 days and they leave. Many of them are managed, many of the units are managed by Arrowhead Property Management. I call, they send somebody over, nothing. I call security, nothing. They may come over, knock on the door, you know, they don't do that. And very, very seldom do I walk down the hall, I don't smell marijuana. Very seldom do I not hear ski boots above me, across from me, everywhere else. I would just like to see at least a 1 week. That's just my proposal, because it is a revolving door. Secondly, I'm a single woman. I don't know who these people are. They come and go every 2 to 3 days. It's weird. I just don't feel right, especially after what all happened in the valley. Don't feel safe. I shouldn't have to feel that way.
I also don't feel safe when I have multiple strangers coming across my backyard every day. But I think we need to really be, I definitely would do a separate regulation for the core and outside the core, because I think we're two separate entities, I think. I mean, you live in the Seasons. The Season has an HOA. I live, Bert lives, we do not have an HOA. You need to protect us.
We are your HOA.
Right. But a lot of other people live in units that have HOAs. But people who live here long term, many of us, live without a particular HOA. And we need your help in protecting us. So I want all of you who rent your places out to think what it would be like if you lived here year-round, and all of a sudden you decide to move here year-round, and next door to your house, short-term renter. And I'd like you to figure out how you would feel if you lived here for 20 years like we have, and all of a sudden you had short-term renters living next door to a seven-bedroom house. So obviously you get a lot of people in a seven-bedroom house. In the Seasons, you have two bedrooms, three bedrooms, whatever. Some of the units in the core are smaller. So just think about it. If you were living here full-time, you would want regulations.
Thanks, Joanne. Other comments? What we're going to be doing at the conclusion or after this meeting, what we've done today, is we'll be putting forth the notes of the meeting. We'll be putting out the voice recording, the audio of the meeting. And we're also going to include in what we distribute the emails that we've received as well, and they'll be part of the record, because you deserve to hear what others who are unable to be here for whatever reason have to say as well. We have some time for anything we'd like to be done. We did design guidelines, right, David?
No?
Oh, we didn't do them?
Oh, David, come on. I remember when they wrote a pass.
Thank you, Dan.
He left for New York at 2 a.m. this morning. He never
moved to the Thank you, George. I'm Dave.
Yeah, introduce you. David Cooper.
Gotcha. Thanks. I'm David Cooper. I chair the Design Review Committee and have been on the committee for now 6 years. We've got a group of people who are involved in the committee, both architects and landscape architects, both outside folk and outside consultants and homeowners. About 4 years ago, the Urban Land Institute came and did a very large study for Arrowhead. Those of you who have been around for a while may remember that. And one of the recommendations they made was for us to upgrade or revise our design guidelines. The AVA board agreed with that, as did we, and they asked us to start that process. So about a year ago, we began the process of both finding consultants, outside consultants that could help us do that, as well as having some opportunity for survey, which a year ago it was sent out to everyone in Arrowhead, which we got very positive results back from. And then we also had open houses last December and January for people to come and talk to us about some of the things they thought could be improved, the quality of architecture and landscape architecture around Arrowhead. We put together a committee, both the Design Review Committee and then an additional group of folk, Terry Scanlon, Bert Solomon, George, Kathy Bennett, were all involved in that as well. So it was a group of 10, along with the Design Review Committee, to go through the process of revising the guidelines. We had the opportunity, since Beaver Creek has done this just a few years ago, to borrow their guidelines as a basis. So they formed the basis of our guidelines, and that helped us a lot to save us a lot of time. So rather than an 18-month process, we were able to do it in about 12. So that was good. The new guidelines, were adopted by the Design Review Committee, which has authority to do that, back in June. And there is a synopsis, a very short two-page synopsis of the 60-page guidelines that you may want to read. It's published on the website, and there are some really simple ideas. The point of changing the guidelines, first of all, was to allow more subjectivity. It's the old guidelines were very, very prescriptive. They demanded that you had a certain percentage of stone, a certain percentage of wood. You could only do so many windows. So we've changed that now to say, let's open up the opportunity and let people have more say in what they want to do. You still go through the Design Review Committee. We still have the authority to say no, and it makes our job a little harder because we truthfully will be more subjective since we don't have such proscriptive guidelines. But our goal is to let it make it easier and more fun and develop better architecture and better landscape architecture in Arrowhead as a whole. We've had our first teardown in Arrowhead, which is really bodes for interesting things because we will see some of the architecture that was done back in the 80s and 90s that wasn't very good. I'm an architect, so I'm biased, but some of those things were built that it'd be okay to see those go away and new things happen. So we're hoping that we're going to allow for more and different materials. The guidelines written earlier did not allow for some materials that we found now today are very good and ones we'd like to use. So that's the crux of it. The second element that's also a major part of the guidelines was we relaxed the number of square feet that you can build on your property. Before, there was not only your setbacks that you had to follow and your height limitations, so how far you had to build from your neighbor and from the street, but also there was an imposition of an additional limit of square footage that you could build on your land, regardless of how large your lot was. But we've taken all those away. You still have to follow the planned unit development concept of setbacks and height limitations, and no more than 30% of your lot can have impervious coverage, or can have building, only 50% can have impervious coverage. So those elements are part of the PUD, the planned unit development. We can't change those. We have no intention of doing so. But we eliminated that extra limitation for square footage. So it should make, we're hoping over the course of the next several years, that we'll start seeing some more interesting things develop around the community and seeing some better architecture as well, and landscape architecture.
So. David, thank you. Are there any questions before I make a comment? Yes, back there. Could I pass this back to you? Come your way.
John McDonough from Riverdance Road. It just seems to me that there's probably some intrinsic conflict between the fire mitigation plan and the lush, gorgeous landscaping that we have now. In just a general terms, could you address that apparent conflict?
One of the problems with landscape and landscape architecture is that when you build a brand new building and you start building and you start landscaping, everyone wants to see it look like a finished product. And landscape changes over the course of time, naturally. So in the 25, 30 years that Arrowhead has been developing, many of the trees have overgrown. They were planted too close to buildings because they looked good when they were 5 feet tall, but at 50 feet tall, they're overwhelming. So you're right. There are some places where the landscape has gotten too large for its setting. And what George was saying earlier about fire mitigation, it's a good idea to pull those things away. The ABA board has said if you're going to do something that mitigates fire around your house, they won't charge you for it. We'll still look at it. We want to make sure that it's not doing something to the rest of the community or your neighbors that has a negative impact, but it's a good idea to be careful with fire. We just have a terrible potential problem up here, and so that's something that we're working on. But we encourage people to think about their landscape and their buildings together as one element.
Thank you. David, the risk of making you blush, this was quite the undertaking that David and the committee that was involved therein went through on our behalf. The guidelines to begin with had to be completely understood, had to be thought about with an open mind as to what should we be changing and what should we not be changing. And if we are making a change, what are the changes that make sense? It's not just the sitting committee, city members, but Bert Solomon, who was engaged and recently went off of the DRC after so many, I think 9 years. This group did so much on our behalf. And what they do every month, site visits, the meetings themselves, is quite a burden, and yet one that they do gracefully, cheerfully, and unfortunately too often, thanklessly. So on behalf of all of us, thank you and your committee. Thank you.
Rick Ross is
on our committee.
Oh, I was just on the committee.
And Rick Ross. Well, Rick's on every committee,
and he deserves to be because he does so much good work.
Thanks, Rick. Thank you. I'd like to open the floor for other topics people would like to discuss. We'll go here and then there. Please identify yourself, Alice.
Alice Davis, 170 Wildflower Place. I have an ongoing concern with the location of the camp, an ongoing concern, Bird Canyon. The camp has as its base the tennis court area, and I think it's pretty obvious that the tennis courts are supposed to be mainly for the use of people who want to play tennis. So, I really think it's inappropriate that that's where the kids are. They're loud, they're screaming, they're having fun. That's what they should do, but I would like to suggest that it should be done at another place, possibly here at the Broken Arrow, at the pool, at the playground, and they should only be at the tennis court when and if they are playing tennis. Many of the people I play with agree with me, but no one else has felt the need to speak up.
Have you received any feedback on the success of the shuttle service going over to Vail?
Hi, my name is Lauren Solomon, and I'm at 84A Riverbend Court, and I agree with Alice because I do play tennis in the tennis courts, and it is disconcerting to hear all the kids because they're right next to the tennis courts, and I think there's got to be a better place for them as well as for us to be in Broken Arrow, you know, in this area of the playground, but not right next to the tennis.
Ladies, if you could express to your fellow players, there will be a better place.
it's easy enough to address.
Okay.
We can certainly do that by dictum. That's the first
by
time
what?
That we've had it.
Dictum,
you know?
She
had the microphone next. She's going to go there.
Okay.
Is it the same topic?
No.
Okay, same topic.
I would like to know if the ball machine and the remote control has been fixed.
Yes, it has. And we will be budgeting for a new one next year.
All right.
Capital improvements deficit. Thank God somebody knew the answer to that, because I certainly didn't.
And before you go on, and I don't need this, but this is not the first year this has happened at with the camp.
Would you like it to be the last year?
I would.
Okay. Yes, please.
Okay. Debbie Dreyfus, 39 Aspen Ridge Lane. And I know that, I don't know if the design committee or the landscape committee is in charge of the walking path behind our house that goes from between Aspen Meadow and Aspen Ridge. They have totally fell off the planet by not maintaining the flowers that were beautifully done for years, and now it looks like it's all weedy and falling apart, and it just looks really terrible. And we were told, my husband was saying, maybe I'd get my landscaper to go back there, but we don't have permission to do that. But it looks really awful.
I think you're about to get an answer.
And I can address that. I just recently walked out with Tom Howard last week. And I do agree. There were plans put forward for this year. We changed our landscaper this year. And we had walked out with them originally. And the areas that we were looking to address, there's about 5 flower beds back there that were either shrub tree beds, and we removed some trees. There were supposed to be some of them that were supposed to be got away with being sodded, and some were supposed to be replanted. And out of the 8, I think, that are back there, 3 were redone. We just addressed that, and it was on their list to take care of. And I'll take the fall for that, because I have not had the opportunity to go back and follow up with them. And now I have back on the radar behind, and I should have been on top of it more. I was assuming it was getting done, and it was not. And so
we're back here to Brian.
Yeah, just a quick question, George, on the shuttle service that you guys started, that the community started to offer to Vail.
For
both Bravo and then during the ski season. Was that well received? Is there any plans to expand that?
Average number of people who went over to Bravo, six times we went over, was about 9 or less. So from a point of view of being valuable to those 9 or less, pretty valuable. To the rest of us, not so much. So it's something, however, the comments from those who did do it were very positive. So it's going to be something that ABA will revisit to see whether it's worth extending one more year as a trial to see how it goes. With regard to the Vail ABA from the village over to Vail, I'll defer to Metro, who undertook that for us.
Yeah, the first 2 years were pretty good. We ran 2 buses the first year. We found it was too much, so we ran 1 bus on Tuesday. The past year wasn't that good. Maybe we had a dozen people, 10 average. But, you know, that goes with the ski season, too, that we had last year. So we'll continue that next year. I don't know if we'll expand it. We can always look at that, but we'll consider it as we go through our budget. But for sure, we'll have a bus on Tuesday. Maybe we flex that to Wednesday. But we'll continue a bus, from the circle to Vail.
You like it? You want to keep it?
Yeah.
Hi, Kirsten Fink, Cantelli, 160 Preston Road, the Upland Club building. And last year we had addressed the issue of pedestrian crossing from Arrowhead Main Gate to Highway 6 to the, and I don't know if we've had anything come up with that.
You say having some sort of traffic device there?
Something, or stripes or something, because there's people crossing, not just us, the people that work that take
going
the bus.
Going to the bus
from one side to the other, crossing Highway 6.
Yeah.
This is the area where it's 50 instead of 40 in other areas. So people are, there's a turn.
I would suggest
can't
that
cross.
The way for us to go about that, since our roads are metro controlled, and since that road is county,
state,
conversation, if Metro decides that it's something they'd like to undertake, certainly worth the conversation be initiated with the state, because they would have to grant approval for such an action to take place.
Yeah, if we did initiate that about 5 years ago with the state, and what they did is they lowered the speed limit by 5 miles.
It's very difficult, but they thought that they were helping us out by decreasing the speed on the road, which I think went from 55 to 50 years.
We did propose the question to them again last fall, and we have to have got the same process. So
thanks.
It is something that is being actively addressed, but.
Never dealt with roads, and I've done quite a few times. I own a children's camp with a main drag out front of it. It's a long, tedious process that you have to, you know, keep fighting. It eventually can get done, perhaps not to the extent that you want it to, but you get improvements. It's a process. Metro and we will follow up on that. Fred?
I think it was wonderful that you had a bus to both Bravo and to Vail. I was not aware, I don't know if I lost the email or I didn't get the email, that it actually existed until the end of the season.
Oh, we sent it to Ivy.
Maybe. Could very well be. But I would encourage you to keep it and test it out a little bit more so that more people find out about it. They may or may not use it, but at least you'll have more than one season.
It's a nice amenity, and yes, you'll have a measurement. Yeah, Gail?
I was just going to go back to Debbie's comment about her landscaping. Do you have an H bike?
No.
So how would she, what vehicle would she then have to, as the season's going on?
Right.
So, you know, when June or July was here, she said no flower beds, that's when she should have been able to
follow. Oh, no. Several neighbors have complained.
Well, Jerry's given us the mea culpa, and we'll accept it and take him at his word that he's going to fix it.
Absolutely. I don't
not follow enough with our landscapers.
And it was a crime to me.
Thank you. Dick Laughlin?
Could you take a look at the entrance signage? We have a very nice sign when you're going west, but coming east, I don't think there's anything. And we should take a look at getting some signage up there. We looked at it years ago, but then there was a financial crisis, and we didn't have any money. So let's see if we can bring that thing back up again.
I think you'll hear some agreement right here.
Hear you. We hear you.
Patty chairs that committee, has brought a proposal to us with the... there too. The same thing financially right now was kind of a challenge to do, and we're trying to maintain our budget as is Metro in a way that doesn't impact all of us. Can we live a little bit longer? Would we like to have the sign? You bet we do. We already have the proposal. Can we live a little bit longer without it? We kind of have to. Other things. Yes.
Hi. Kathleen Watt, 62 Riverbend Drive. So we are situated right in the middle of the construction zone, and it's extremely unpleasant, as you can imagine. I know you're proud of the first tear down, but we're not proud to live next to that giant hole. Anyway, it's like three stories deep. It's really a huge hole. And they put a fence around it, and the hole comes to underneath the fence so that in my yard, when my two-year-old grandson is out there, I worry that he will go into the hole.
That can be corrected. Yes.
When they walked through before we began our painting, which we didn't realize our painting was going to be happening the same time this was happening. We were not told that everything was starting at the same time. So that's been interesting. Anyway, mainly I blocked in my driveway repeatedly by giant trucks. It's a muddy mess. Trucks are parked on both sides of the road, even though whenever I call security, they say they're only supposed to be parked on one side of the road. I said, do you want me to go tell the big steam shovel or the dump truck? How am I doing this? So I would just really appreciate if the design review board would just follow through and watch what their crews are doing that they've allowed. I mean, it's a huge mess. Now, both sides.
Design staff, professionals that are employed, routinely making their rounds to check to see that.
It's daily.
I understand that.
Yeah.
They should be. Now, a phone call to the public safety. We will encourage public safety then to engage the TRC so you get the design professional staff so that you get a more prompt response to your complaint as you deserve. Folks, 100. Oh, I thought you were handing me something. Oh, you want that?
Yeah. Okay. It's probably the last thing. I'm Sarah Tacchino, 201 Spruce Tree. We love our dogs in this neighborhood. I know everybody loves their dogs. What is the policy on leash laws and who is allowed to have a dog off a leash? And I thought we were all supposed to keep our dog on a leash because I've had a couple of incidences where our dog has been approached by a loose dog, and I just want to keep it friendly.
There's a leash law that pertains to everyone, and the place that you can have your dog on a leash is on your very private property. It's as straightforward as that. That didn't take place. We apologize. I guess that's, again, something for us to make note of, who it was and for...
how do you report that? I guess that's the question.
How do you report that?
No, how do you report it?
You call public safety.
Okay.
You have that number in your books.
I think it's supposed to be
and it's a fine.
Yeah, because I've encountered several times. The natural comment is, well, my dog's well trained. Well, your dog's well trained. But it's not fair to me or my dog.
Yeah. We're, you spread the good news. Hold on, coming back. We have another comment here, please.
Yep.
Folks, we listen to each other. We continue just another couple of minutes and put you out.
This is a weird one. Okay. I'm Barb DeLuca. I live 0663 Sawwatch at Lariat. I'm in the village, and I don't know if you guys are having this happen in the rest of the neighborhood, but we had a gang of crows, probably...
I'm talking...
Actually,
murder
they're called
murder.
You're right. Probably over 100 to 200. And I would stand around 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock on my deck, and I see them go by 5, 6, 5, 6, and I start counting in 10 minutes. 50 went over my head.
You had an umbrella, right?
And they all landed over here, and you could hear, it sounded like a convention. Now, I understand that they can kill songbirds. They'll kill nestlings. They'll eat eggs. It's gone real quiet around the neighborhood where we are. I don't hear the little songbirds anymore in the morning. But I know they're kind of tricky to get rid of.
Well, there's a Department of Wildlife that can be contacted. Eric, you have a solution?
They show up every August and they leave sometime during September. I don't know where they go.
Short-term rentals.
They're not here. And
we don't have any songbirds right now.
Ladies and gentlemen, before you leave, 175. Oh, we have a question. Okay.
Hi, I'm Lynn Siegel, and I live in Hillside Court. But I have a question. One of my guests this February was bit by a dog in Arrowhead. And she was just walking by. One dog was on a leash. The other one was. It went through her jacket, into her arm, to get some emergency room. I called public safety, and my concern is that this dog should have been banned from ever coming back here because of the fact that there's little kids walking and everything else. Now, this was an adult, and it wasn't even a big dog. But don't we have rules that if a dog pick someone that dogs, I mean, I have to say,
that's
very
that's regular county and state law.
It is.
They have to come evaluated and a decision made not by any of our entities, but by them. Was it reported to the police?
Yes, it was.
Not to public safety, to police.
It was both.
Good.
Because the hospital
police
made
about it.
But if we're talking about dogs being on and off leashes, there's children around here, too.
You just had a two-part question. Being on a leash, that's a, we can do something about that. The bite is something that the police have to take care of.
So if there
drive it by these people in the neighborhood, we can't say it shouldn't be allowed again, or, you know.
Thank you. I'm going to try one more time. 175 people have attended these two town hall meetings. That's impressive. Your voices have been heard. Your board has heard them. We will listen as well. There are some takeaways that we have. We will follow up with them. You're going to have an audio file on our website. You're going to have a printout of the notes of this meeting. The website is arrowheadatbale.com. Drum roll.